From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
But the most cynical behavior in all this, the most appalling, is the fact that Governor Blagojevich tried to sell the appointment to the Senate seat vacated by President-elect Obama. The conduct would make Lincoln roll over in his grave. The governor's own words describing the Senate seat, quote, "It's a bleeping valuable thing. You just don't give it away for nothing," close quote. Another quote, "I've got this thing and it's bleeping golden. And I'm just not giving it up for bleeping nothing. I'm not going to do it, and I can always use it. I can parachute me there," quote. Those are his words, not our characterization.
I do not think that the governor at this point can effectively serve the people of Illinois. The legislature is going down to Springfield to make a determination as to how to resolve this issue. I think they're going to come to the same conclusion. I hope that the governor himself comes to the conclusion that he can no longer effectively serve and that he does resign.
President-elect Barack Obama and before him Patrick Fitzgerald, the U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Illinois, at a Chicago news conference where he outlined several allegations of fraud and corruption against Governor Rod Blagojevich, including the allegations that Blagojevich put a for sale sign on the U.S. Senate seat vacated by Obama. The FBI arrested the governor at 6 a.m. on Tuesday at his home in Chicago, handcuffed him, and took him off to jail. President-elect Obama was speaking at a Chicago news conference on Thursday where he urged the governor to resign. In fact, politicians of all stripes have been calling upon Blagojevich to resign, many even demanding that he resign to avoid impeachment proceedings in the Illinois House of Representatives. The General Assembly is returning to Springfield next week to address the issue. And in the meantime, the Illinois Attorney General has filed a motion with the state Supreme Court to declare the governor unable to serve and to make the lieutenant governor the governor. And so this week has been witness to the most unprecedented series of events in the history of Illinois politics. I'm Rich Bradley. Our panel members for the broadcast today include Chris Mooney, a professor of political studies with the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois at Springfield. Charlie Wheeler is director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS. In our State House Bureau, Sean Crawford, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS, and Amanda Vinicky, State House Reporter for WUIS. Well, gentlemen, let's begin with Charlie and Chris here at the station. Thoughts on and reflections on all of the events happening this week, especially this filing now by the Attorney General of the state of Illinois.
Well, it's full court press to get Blagojevich out of there, and they're trying every possible method. This, you know, the word unprecedented, unique, one of a kind, historic, has been, or those words have been thrown around quite a bit this week. So everybody's scrambling, trying to figure out what to do. And when you've got a guy like Rod Blagojevich, who we have talked many and many a time and many, many a month about on this program as being sort of having a rationality all his own, when you're trying to think about what to do and how to get him to do stuff, you have to try a variety of things. A rational person would have slunk off with his tail between his legs by now, but we've got Rod Blagojevich.
And Charlie, what can you say about the nature of the Attorney General's filing?
Well, it clearly is unprecedented. We've never had a situation like this in Illinois government or politics before. And I think part of it is that the provision that she's using was something new that was added in the 1970 Constitution. What to do in case there is an executive officer, the chief executive officer, the governor, who becomes disabled. And the Constitution says that if the governor determines he can no longer carry out his duties, then he can make an official notification to that effect and have the lieutenant governor serve as acting governor until such point as the governor feels that he can resume his duties. But there's sort of a loophole there in the sense of what do we do when a governor who is arguably not able to carry out his duties doesn't make that declaration or is in a condition where he can't. Say he had a massive stroke and he's in a coma. And so the Supreme Court has enacted a rule that allows for a motion to be filed with the court asking the court to hear this matter, and that's what the Attorney General did. asked the court to consider whether or not the governor is able to carry out his duties. And in fact, she's asking that the court say he is not. And if the court doesn't want to make that ruling, that at least the court says in these particular areas, the areas that were referenced in the criminal complaint, to issue an order barring the governor from taking any action in those particular areas, such as appointing a replacement for President-elect Obama.
Sean, Amanda, there at the State House, the two of you have been in a position to observe everything in the environs of the state capitol, the domed building, as it were. Characterize for us the nature of how people down there have reacted, responded to all of these events.
You know, I think that, again, nobody is in shock, per se, that corruption charges were laid out against the governor. And the governor's been kind of known as the guy who likes a tough fight, who goes out on his own. And most people predicted that he wasn't going to resign. And they said right from the beginning, as soon as this broke out on Tuesday morning, that, you know, I think he's defiant enough. People have used words like arrogant, that he isn't going to step down. And so I think that you have everybody here, including the attorney general, trying to separate themselves from the governor. She says it's not a political decision. She said that that did not enter her mind. But, you know, you got to think when you have a Democratic state constitutional officer who has, albeit tried to separate herself from Blagojevich for several years now, but nonetheless, you know, at one point in time, there are pictures, Blagojevich used them himself, of Judy Bartopinka in when he was running against her for office with George Ryan. So, you know, you see here Lisa Madigan, state lawmakers of every variety, trying to separate themselves as much as possible from him. And they say it's also, you know, wanting to move on. Everybody's grasping at straws, I think, to kind of get him out as fast as they can, because if he's not going to do it himself, what are they to do?
And, you know, certainly when it comes to the lawmakers, if there was an up or down vote right now to impeach Rod Blagojevich, in fact, there, even if it was a few weeks ago, that might have passed, you know, with very little evidence needed, whatever. But I want to get back to what Charlie had mentioned there about the reason that this Supreme Court rule really exists, and that is, I think, you know, when the governor is incapacitated and cannot function. Rod Blagojevich has been going to work every day since this criminal complaint was filed. Some would say he's actually working more now than he was before. I think it's a very hard... It's a slippery slope, I guess, is the best way to say it, to ask the court to make this decision. I'm not standing up for Rod Blagojevich here. I mean, I think if anybody was giving him advice, you would tell him it's probably time to move on. But to me, this seems like something that is a maneuver that I'm not sure a lot of people are comfortable with.
Because really, he's not incapacitated completely. And it's also, this separation of powers. You've got these three branches of government, and asking the courts to get involved here when there's clearly a mechanism. Some people might, I think, say that it's kind of a scapegoat for the legislature. You've had Republicans, chair of the Republican Party, Andy McKenna, Senator Christine Rodonio, I know we've spoken with, saying, no, the House needs to get off and get up and start these impeachment proceedings right now, and there's no need for them to be waiting around. Again, there are plenty of arguments that you hear from Speaker Madigan, spokesperson, saying why he's holding off in terms of, you know, what were to happen if the impeachment proceedings were to continue when a new General Assembly is going to be inducted come mid-January, and that there might not be enough evidence to carry forth with this because the federal prosecutors might not share everything that they have. But nonetheless, I mean, they're getting some criticism. And here we have Attorney General Madigan, I guess, in a way, letting the legislature off the hook for a bit.
Well, there's two points I want to make on that.
I don't think I'd agree with that at all, because the most politically expedient thing for the legislature to do, every one of those people down there, would be to show up at the governor's house in Ravenswood with tar and feather in hand and a rail to ride him out of town. So the notion that Republicans are trying to promote that, well, what is Madigan stalling? Is he trying to protect Blagojevich or something? I think that is ludicrous on its face.
I don't think they're trying to protect Blagojevich. They're grasping
at straws. And Madigan, the speaker, is a very methodical guy. He's somebody who cares a lot about process, and he's not going to do something that looks like a kangaroo court. And if you look at it totally divorced from the politics, the notion of going through an impeachment process, you could impeach somebody in the House pretty quickly But then there has to be a trial in the Senate. And in fairness to Blagojevich or whomever the next person along the line might be, that trial has to be conducted with due process, with standards for evidence, with all the kind of things you'd find in an analogous criminal situation, or at least a civil proceeding. It can't just be a kangaroo court.
Well, at least you'd hope it wouldn't be. And I think one of the things I think is going on and would go on in a Senate trial would be that I think the idea that they have to wait for the evidence, I don't buy that argument, because I think as a jury, and as we know from many runaway jury in various cases over the years, that they don't need evidence. They just have to vote, and the Senate would be happy to go ahead and vote. But then you start again in this. I don't know if anybody but me see 24 a couple of years ago. They had a scenario. This is a TV show about this guy who used to do a lot of torture and whatnot back when it was popular. There was a scenario or a storyline in there where they were removing the president, and that was basically for policy reasons. They were saying he was incapacitated because he did not they had policy differences. Now, this isn't a policy difference situation, but it certainly is analogous in the sense that this is not the kind of incapacity that we typically think of when we think of these kind of statutes. It's not a medical incapacity. It's probably not a psychological incapacity in the sense that he is. Unless you want to bring in psychologists and psychiatrists to examine him and pronounce judgment on him, I don't think you're going to have that sort of a situation. So I think the Supreme Court is going to be careful. I think it's very unlikely that they're going to buy this argument from the Attorney General. But it does sort of inoculate her, number one, from being around the governor. And number two, gets her a little bit of face time on CNN. I think I just saw that a few minutes ago. MSNBC, she looks great. This is a big plus for Lisa Madigan, I think.
And as she says, I mean, her point being, and I think a lot of people would agree with this at this point, that it would perhaps get him out of office. This is just, again, she's just asking for him to be temporarily removed. She says that no, the legislature should still go forward with impeachment, she believes. And so get him out of there so that things can proceed. I mean, we did see, as she mentioned in her press conference, Illinois has been put on credit watch. The short-term borrowing plan that the comptroller and Blagojevich himself and many others have wanted to go forward, when you have all of these, hospitals, child care providers, all of these different entities and social service providers waiting for the state to pay its bills, that's been held up. So, I mean, her argument there is this: get them out of office and all of that move on.
It's easy, I think, though, in the heat of the moment to say yes. There's nobody. I mean, what did I see? Rod Blagojevich has an 8% approval rating in the latest poll. I'd like to find the 8%.
Yeah, where are those 8%? People around his kitchen table.
And the margin of error is 4%.
Yeah, right. Even then, still. But, I mean, I think it's easy to get caught up in this heat of the moment thing. But I try to look at this as in the historical context. And there is no doubt in my mind that Rod Blagojevich is probably hurting the state right now by staying in office. I think most people, as a taxpayer, as a citizen of the state, I feel that way. But at the same time, I don't know if I'm comfortable with the Supreme Court moving in and even saying temporarily take him out because something negative has come up in his life here. And most of this negativity, while it's brought by the U.S. Attorney's Office, the national media moving in and focusing on him so heavily, that's what's really impeding right now his ability to even maneuver anything, to go to work, things like that. He's going to work, but under a cloud of suspicion, under cameras that are in his face everywhere he goes. I just think right now, if they want to impeach him, if they want to do that and move to that, that's fine, because as Charlie, as you mentioned, there are some standards that need to be followed there. It is sort of a trial, and they can decide then what they want to do. But I just think having the court do it really behind closed doors, if the court makes this decision, they would just release a statement. I'm just not sure it's the way to go.
Yeah, and it's not going to happen. This court is a conservative court with a small c. It's not going to get out there and do anything controversial. Even though they are elected officials, and most elected officials at this point are doing everything they can to throw Rod Blagojevich overboard, they're very cautious, and I can't see it happening.
Sean, in the meantime, the lieutenant governor on Thursday held a rather lengthy and rambling news conference in his office here in the state capitol in Springfield. What were some of the points he was raising?
Well, I think he also said, in the best interest, of course, he is urging Rod Blagojevich to step down, but he also says that the best case scenario other than that would be for the legislature to act. He also seemed to downplay a bit the Supreme Court getting involved in this, but he also supported Lisa Madigan making this move. He feels Blagojevich being out would help the state move forward. Now Pat Quinn, of course, has a conflict. When you talk about that, he would become governor. At the same time, I didn't get the feeling that was behind his statements. He did make a couple of controversial statements, specifically the one I thought was that he said, sort of almost really flip-flop from just a day or two before, saying that the U.S. Senate appointment should be handled by the incoming governor himself. Basically, it would be Pat Quinn, that he could make this appointment, get somebody in place, as it's, you know, from a timeliness standpoint, it's important, and it would save the state money. So before that, he was talking like an election, a special election would be a good idea. He seems to have changed his tune a bit on that, and that, of course, gives critics an opportunity to jump on him from the start.
Let me weigh in and say that I have no conflict of interest at all. I will still be a professor, God willing, at the University of Illinois Springfield, whether Rod Blagojevich is governor or whether Pat Quinn is governor. But I think just from a sound economic basis and from a timing basis, mm-hmm. the notion of changing the statute to have a special election probably is not prudent at this time. The finances, I've seen estimates, minimum estimate was $30 million to have a special election. It was as high as, I think I saw somewhere, $80 million. Most of that cost of election is borne by the local officials, by the counties and by the city election commissions, not by the state. And I'm sure county government doesn't want to be socked with that bill. Now, people will argue, well, we have these consolidated elections coming up in the early spring. We could do it with that time frame. But that would require the law to be changed almost instantaneously. And even were the legislature on Monday to pass a bill changing the statute and saying that we have special elections, the governor still has to sign the bill. The governor has 60 days to determine what to do. The current legislature will be gone before that 60 days is up. The governor could wait until January 15th, when the next legislature is sworn in, veto the bill, and you'd have to start all over from scratch. And if the new legislature did it, and he waited another 60 days, being able to hold the special election in conjunction with the already scheduled consolidated elections would be impossible. So I think you're faced with this exorbitant expense for the local governments. I think that's one reason not to do it. Another reason is I don't think you should necessarily change the laws to deal with one bad apple.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm probably one of the few people who's old enough to remember the last time we had a vacancy in the U.S. Senate, and it was when Senator Everett McKinley Dirksen passed away. Governor Ogilvie appointed the guy who was then Speaker of the House to fill out that term, Ralph Tyler Smith. He ran for election on his own. He got beat by Adlai Stevenson. When Ogilvie made the appointment, there wasn't all this hue and cry, and it was because Ogilvie was a man of integrity. Even his political opponents who differed from him, no one would ever dream of accusing Richard Ogilvie of trying to sell the job. So I think just because we have one guy who in his own words, appears like a venal rat, doesn't mean you change the statute.
And Charlie, just real quick, I think I agree with you on that. I actually do. I think the one concern you would have of somebody making an appointment right now is this investigation is continuing on. You would hate to see Illinois wind up in the same situation later where somebody who not, again, appointed, not picked, even if there is no quid pro quo discussion, if Pat Quinn were to make a decision and appoint somebody that he thinks on their face would be a perfect candidate for this, and then you find out later maybe there was something going on with this person. Maybe they wanted it and they were trying to work behind the scenes. So who knows? I do see why people say maybe the public should just weigh in, even if it does cost extra money, just to ensure that Illinois government, at least in some people's eyes, is trying to do the right thing.
Well, what I'm saying is there's no guarantee that you're going to be able to avoid having to spend at a minimum $30 million, most of which will be paid by local governments. And again, at a minimum, you may be into March before you even have the primary.
And that would be every time we lost a U.S. senator, who knows when it would be. And it would depend on how the legislation was written. Does it have to be called within 60 days? Is it the next general election or whatnot? You know, the one thing that, I mean, Sean, you bring up a good point, that what's needed is what future Governor Quinn would need to appoint someone who is above reproach, above suspicion, and I think it would serve him well in his own political career, which is, he hopes, far from over, to appoint someone who would restore some trust and integrity in state government. And so you cast about and you think, well, who is this going to be? Is it going to be any of the young up-and-comers in the Democratic Party? Probably not, because these are people who, again, may or may not have some sort of relationship with Blagojevich, and that'll play out over time. And even if they didn't, that'll become clarified. And it looks in some degree self-serving. If I was advising Governor Quinn, or future Governor Quinn, I would say pick somebody like Jim Edgar, somebody across the aisle, a well-respected guy. He's a former governor who went out on a high note and spent his time working at the University of Illinois and giving back, to public service. We've talked about him before, as opposed to, say, a Jim Thompson, who did other things in making money, which is perfectly within his right. But a person like that, and I don't know, he's just an example, but there's other probably that people can think of that would instill some confidence among the people in the state and let everybody calm down a little bit, and the panic mode that we're all in right now might subside a bit.
And one interesting note, I just do want to point out, too, that Quinn did say at this news conference this week that he had gotten a call from Jim Thompson. Thompson basically just saying this week, basically saying, I'm willing to do, to help you out if you need me. Now, that's according to what Quinn said it was just sort of an offer of help. And here's a guy, of course, that does know what it takes to be governor. So I think he viewed that as a legitimate offer of assistance if the case arose.
Well, and if you recall, Jim Thompson assisted Rod Blagojevich, but apparently Blagojevich didn't pay that much attention.
Well, not only did he assist him, he assisted the former Governor Ryan all the way over to the Terre Haute Federal Penitentiary.
And you can look at George Ryan's situation and you can look at Rod Blagojevich's, and they're so different. I mean, corruption is corruption, I think, and there are different degrees of it, certainly. But there's no doubt in my mind that Rod Blagojevich would probably have some people coming to his rallying around him saying maybe it's too soon to cast judgment. If he was a little bit more like some of these other people who have held that office and worked with the legislature better, there's no doubt that people just do not like him. He has burned a lot of bridges, and this is just giving them even more fodder to possibly rush to a judgment on it.
Not to mention classes on phone etiquette.
Well, the glee that was heard around the state Tuesday, especially in state office buildings among state workers. It was just resounding. Whereas with George Ryan, I think that it was the guy did bad things and he deserved to go to prison. But I don't think a lot of people took pleasure in his demise. Where I think there are a lot of people taking pleasure Governor Blagojevich's demise.
Yeah. Chris, I don't know how widely reported it was, but I know former Governor Jim Edgar was on our air. I think he held a news conference at the Urbana-Champaign campus, but he said the voters, the people of Illinois, have nobody to blame but themselves.
Well, of course not.
For Rod Blagojevich even being in office in a second term.
And I never will forget that I've probably mentioned this three times on this show over the years, but John O'Connor, AP reporter, wrote chapter and verse a list of the way in which the endemic hiring fraud that was perpetrated by the Blagojevich administration on the state civil service system. He wrote it all out 10 days before the last election. The electorate, it ran all over the state. The electorate said, oh, well, what's in the funny papers today? I'll vote for the guy with the good hair over the weird old lady.
Well, there's no doubt this investigation's continuing, and some of that stuff, I think, may become indictments down the road. Who knows how far this could go?
I guess in quasi-defense of the public, Rod Blagojevich spent $25 million to paint Judy Bartopinka's George Ryan in drag.
That's a scary thought.
but he made her out to be a clone and that she was just as corrupt. And I think maybe people thought, well, what the heck? They're both crooks, and I'll just vote for the one who's there already. And, yes, so there is some what would you say, responsibility on the part of the electorate to try and educate itself better, not get suckered by these 15-second and 30-second attack commercials, do a little homework, do a little research, and try and inform themselves on the issues. So there was a public opinion survey taken not too long ago for the Simon Institute, where people said, we need to spend more money on health care. We need to spend more money on education. We need to spend more money on social services. Oh, and we need to cut taxes, too. You know, there's just sort of like, hey, this doesn't make sense.
And you can say the same thing, too, though, about George Ryan when he was elected governor. Certainly it was starting to come out, some of the scandals that were occurring in the Secretary of State's office. They hadn't necessarily tied up to George Ryan at that point, but certainly those were out there and people were hearing about them. But again,
it was nowhere near as clear as what was going on.
No, it wasn't. You're right. It wasn't clear, but there was certainly at least rumblings of corruption at that office as well.
So. Got a couple of minutes left in the program. Amanda, I wanted to draw you in here because you reported this week that all the problems now for Governor Rob Blagojevich may in fact end up manifesting themselves in a cost financially, dollars and cents to state government in Illinois in terms of the bond rating.
Well, right. As I mentioned, right now that has not happened. Illinois has just been put on credit watch, so it's going to be monitored for 3 months. But what's interesting about that is that normally they just look at the state's budget, and of course that was included. The analyst from Standard & Poor's said that, yes, Illinois clearly does have a dismal fiscal situation right now, and pointed out that it was even before the economic downturn. So blaming it all on that, which is what you hear from the governor's spokespeople, their response was, you know, every state's having fiscal challenges right now, so this is to be expected. But no, Standard & Poor's says Illinois has happened way before that. The interesting part, though, is it's not just the budget. They didn't leave it there. They said, we think that the governor's fiscal troubles are going to hinder the state's ability to deal with this. And they even noted, they said, we have noticed that in recent years, the governor and legislature have not been cooperating, and we think that that will further deteriorate. So you're clearly seeing the whole history there. I mean,
I'm not on Wall Street. I'm not an investment banker, but I think that's bogus. Those bonds are sold, and the bondholders stand at the front of the line to collect. And for them to default on the bonds, it would be tantamount to the state going out of business. They'd have to auction off, you know, the governor's mansion to pay those bonds. So the notion that the current governor is embroiled in trouble with the legislature, the notion that the current governor may be headed to jail, really shouldn't have any impact rationally on whether or not these bonds are good and the creditworthiness of the state. As a matter of fact, when the bonds are sold, debt service on general obligation bonds is a continuing appropriation. It doesn't matter if the legislature sets aside money for it or not, they get paid.
And Charlie, there might be some that say that if Blagojevich is gone,
we're out of time. Thanks to panel members Chris Mooney, and Charlie Wheeler, Sean Crawford, and Amanda Vinicky. The engineering and production assistance for the program today was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Rich Bradley.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.